and welcome to Between the Lines.
This is Gerard Organ presenting, and in the studio today we have Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, the CEO of the Rape Crisis Centre. We also have Noel Rock, who's a Fine Gael representative in the local area. And we also have Mick O'Reilly, who is the president of the Dublin Council of Trade Unions and a lifelong trade union leader. We hope to be joined by Dr. Mary McAuliffe, a historian and lecturer at University College Dublin's Women's Studies. In the programme today, we're going to be looking at rape case sentences, and this goes back to the Fiona Doyle and many other cases over the last number of years. We also hope, when we're joined by Dr. McAuliffe, we will be discussing the Magdalene laundries and the McAleese report. We will give you, when we are discussing these issues, we will give you numbers, because I know that many people, both in this community and in many other communities, would have been affected by these issues. Firstly, we're going to go to Mick O'Reilly. Mick, yesterday we had a crowd estimated at about 25,000 to 28,000 people marching in Dublin and in other areas around the country. It was an anti-austerity march. Now, from looking at this during the week, it seemed there's a feeling out there that this whole austerity problem now has been lessened by the shenanigans in Frankfurt during the week. Did you feel that yesterday? Did you get the feeling that people felt they were going through the motions yesterday?
Well, I think that yesterday's march, the original intention was actually to apply pressure on the government to bring back a deal, because nobody, in the planning that went up to the march, nobody had an expectation that we'd have the deal so early. So in one sense, the deal, I think, caught the marchers and the organisers by surprise. But I think in another sense, the fact that they went ahead with the march, I think, is a very good omen for the opposition. For this reason, that the ICTU have been not, and I give here a personal opinion, not as vocal or as vibrant in standing up for the membership as they perhaps should have been. Even though we don't have a partnership in this country any longer, the old habits die hard. And the habits of unions in propping up governments go slowly, and they need to move much faster. But I think yesterday was an extraordinarily good day for the trade union movement, because one, they showed that they're still representative of thousands of people, and two, they're saying simply this. This deal is not enough, whatever your view about it. It's a deal in which we have transformed a very dubious payment, which was never ours in the first place, which we didn't owe and should not have paid. And I'm going to say, no matter how many times on how many radio stations and how much in the media the opposite has said, the truth will out on this. But nevertheless, what the government has done will lessen, of course, to some degree, the burden. I heard Michael Noonan talk in that folksy way of his, comparing all this to, you know, buying a house. But you see, at the end of the story, Michael Noonan had his house. When we pay off all these debts, we won't have two blades of grass more. We won't have another nurse. We won't have a teacher. We won't have a school. We won't have anything. So we're being put through the ringer, but we're not getting anything for it. It's not our debt. So I think it's an omen that we can build upon. I think it was very good that the trade union movement led this. And I'll make this prediction. The government are now crowing about how marvellous this is, and so are the media. Well, let's say they're right. They'll be able to demonstrate the correctness or otherwise of this in the Crow Park negotiations, because they have nurses working for 80% of the rate and they ain't showing up for the job. They have teachers whose wages they're cutting, and they want to inflict more pain and worsening conditions on everybody. So let them say where the people are going to begin to benefit from this. If we have 20 billion extra over the next 10 years or so, how are we going to feel better, and what's going to be done to make us feel better? Because if we don't stimulate the domestic economy, right, we won't get out of the mess that we're in.
Okay, Noel Rock, you're a kind of government supporter. Were you crowing late this week?
I wouldn't say I'm ever crowing at all. In the times we're in, I think triumphalism is never really welcome necessarily. What I would say is that I contend a lot of what Mick says insofar as I think this deal this week was ultimately a good thing. You say we're not going to own two blades of grass at the end of it and that we're not paying teachers or getting anything out of it necessarily. What I would say by comparison is that it gives us the capacity, the ability indeed, to pay these people on a continuing basis. It gives us the stability to go forward from here. It gives us the stability to pay bills tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. Our bond yields are at the lowest level they've been since 2005, not even pre-crisis, but back kind of in good times, basically. Our five-year bond yields are 10-year bond yields, which means that markets trust us. They know that in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, Ireland is still going to be a solvent entity, if you like, and will still be able to repay its bills and keep the lights on the morning.
But Noel, people listening to us here, right, around Artane, Beaumont, Glantarf, Coolock, Darndale, you know, what they have seen over the last few years is cutbacks in services and cuts, say, to community enterprises and actually ground-up involvement of people. You know, will they see any difference? Will this make any difference to them? You can talk about the overall situation in the country, but what most people are interested in at the moment is we're coping at the moment, and you know, does this deal bring employment anyway forward, and will it lessen the cuts? And if there's going to be less cuts, will they be targeted so as the poorer sections of our communities aren't liable?
Listen, I mean, I don't know the answers and I can't see the future, unfortunately. We do know that it will make a real difference to our budgetary situation for budget 2014-2015 from here onwards. So while I can't forecast or predict necessarily what that'll mean in terms of the micro details, I can say that personally, I would hope it means that people from areas like this aren't hit at all in the next budget. I would say that people like me have been hit disproportionately heavily because I'm on a low income with some of the measures that were brought in budget 2013, for example. And I would hope that in the next budget, that 1 billion that we've saved in effect will be used to protect people from backgrounds like myself.
Well, let's look at in the negotiations before the last budget. There was a proposal by Labour that anyone earning over 100,000 that the USC was to be put up. Right. And a lot of people were actually expecting it. But Fine Gael said because we promised no new taxes, it didn't happen. They wanted the lower social welfare rate cuts as a quid pro quo, and Labour couldn't buy that.
Absolutely. Listen, I'm on the record. I'm on the record of saying I disagree.
Yeah, but that's you know. So does that give us a feel as to where your party will go
in its philosophy? It possibly does, Ger. But I mean, that's the reason I'm inside this party is to lobby, if you like, and negotiate on behalf of working people like this, because I don't believe that, you know, we've all suffered the same burden necessarily. I personally believe that people over 80k, over 100k should be paying more at this point in time, even if it's as a temporary measure. And moreover, you talked about the Croke Park renegotiations in Croke Park 2. I think Croke Park has to be upheld at all costs for people below a certain threshold of income. I think when you go above a certain threshold, unfortunately, you've got to look at reductions for people.
Okay, I'm going to go to Ellen O'Malley Dunlop on this one.
Well, I'm not a politician and I'm not a union person, but I would like to add a voice for the voluntary and community sector in this debate, because it's interesting that the voluntary and community sector were not included in the Croke Park agreement, and I think that is very it's sad. I think that a lot of the people who are listening to us this morning never ever experienced what was the mythic Celtic tiger. So they are, though, experiencing even further austerity now, and I think that's it has to be rectified, and I do hope that the deal that has been made recently will go a long way to ensuring that people in these areas will get a fair deal and not what they have been experiencing over the last couple of years, the further austerity and nothing that they got nothing at all during, as I say, the mythic Celtic tiger years.
Mick, I want to move on to our next topic now. If people want to contact the Dublin Council of Trade Unions about something, how do they do it? Have you got a contact email?
We have a Facebook and we have a website, and we're available there.
Okay, what's your website?
Off the top of my head, you've caught me on that.
Okay, for those of you with access to Facebook and the internet in general, I'm sure you can Dublin Council of Trade Unions. If you Google it, I'm sure you come up. Sorry, it's early of a Sunday. We've been joined. I'd like to welcome Dr. Mary McAuliffe in as well. We're going to move on next to talk about the many people will have heard in the recent past about the sentence in a rape case where the judge in the end gave a 3.5 year sentence, 11 year sentence first, brought it down to 3.5, and then actually left a guy out on appeal. Now this was sorted through one of our guests actually was very involved and very vocal in that whole thing to basically ensure that this man actually went to prison. But in general, sentencing in Ireland on rape cases would seem to be extraordinarily low for the severity of what was done to women and girls and to men as well.
Well, you're referring to the Fiona Doyle
That's
case,
right.
And I think Fiona Doyle has to be commended and congratulated for her absolute amazing generosity and courage in coming out and waiving her right to anonymity in this particular case, so that she, and not just she herself, but that other victims of rape and sexual abuse would get justice at the end of the day. And I think that it was fascinating to hear her. No animosity, there was no revenge in anything that she from the place that she spoke from. There was no revenge or anything of that nature. She was so generous. But what happened in the Fiona Doyle case was she got caught between a situation with the judge in the case, Justice Carney, and the Court of Criminal Appeal. And I think that is just unacceptable, that a victim should be caught in that type of debate. We have in this country a Court of Criminal Appeal, which is made up of two High Court judges and one Supreme Court judge. But it's not a permanent court. So you can have judges there who are dealing with criminal cases, and they may never have experienced any criminal experience. They might be coming from, for example, commercial courts. And this is just unacceptable. And Justice Carney has had a run-in in the past with the Court of Criminal Appeal, and what he was doing was preempting the fact that this man, Fiona Doyle's father, would appeal the sentence to the Court of Criminal Appeal. What can happen is, if it's a very severe sentence, the person who's convicted can appeal it to the Court of Criminal Appeal. If it's a very lenient sentence, the DPP can appeal it to the Court of Criminal Appeal. And what has happened in the past is the Court of Criminal Appeal overturned a sentence of Justice Carney, where he had given an elderly man a custodial sentence, and the Court of Criminal Appeal said that he didn't take into consideration this man's age and his state of health, and they gave the man there was no sentence. He didn't have to serve a custodial sentence. So this is what happened in this particular case, and this isn't good enough. We should have a permanent Court of Criminal Appeal. We should have sentencing guidelines. We should have education for judges who are dealing in these cases, so that they can understand, the seriousness and the emotional the cost to the individual. Fiona Doyle herself said that she felt that she was re-victimised by the court process. Now, that is absolutely unacceptable, that somebody who has been a victim of childhood sexual abuse and has the courage to come forward and not only would by naming this man and going to court, it also ensures that other children are not victims of this perpetrator, because that is, like, this man, God only knows how many victims are out there that he has been a perpetrator of. So you know, it's a the victims who come out and go to court and report, they are doing a fantastic service, not just for themselves and for other potential victims, but for the whole of society. And they are really to be commended. But I do think we have to ensure that the sentence fits the crime. And I actually, Ger, what I would say to you is that by and large, the judges do give fair sentences.
Now, I'm just wondering about that, Helen, in that Justice Carney, who's been, by all accounts, a very good judge down the years,
absolutely,
that he was absolutely frustrated that the Court of Criminal Appeal might actually rescind his sentence. So he was put into a straight... So he was, this is a cry for help from him. But I got the feeling that Fiona Doyle was actually caught in the crossfire. He was looking for genuine sentences, meaningful sentences. But also, and we're going to come to it with the Magdalenes as well, is that a lot of elderly men, more than likely, who are brought to book finally, because it happened 20 or 30 years ago, that somehow there's a kind of a shield. Oh, that was then. That was the dark old days.
Well, that's not good enough. And I think
do you get that impression that that's...
Well, I think you're absolutely right about Justice Carney being a fair and a good judge, and that in this particular instance, as it happened before in Mary Shannon case some years ago, same kind of thing. She got caught in the crossfire between the judge and the Court of Criminal Appeal. And that's why it's so important for us to have a permanent Court of Criminal Appeal, and judges who are, you know, dealing with cases who are experts in the particular field, that you have criminal judges with criminal expertise dealing with criminal cases and judges with commercial expertise dealing with commercial expertise. Not what we have at the moment. It's absolutely unacceptable.
Mary McAuliffe, Dr. Mary McAuliffe, I'd like to hear from you on this. What we're talking about, basically, when you came in there, we were talking about the sentences for rape, and I suppose the discouragement of people to come forward, which is there. And I'm just wondering what your feeling is on this.
Well, I would agree with everything that has been said up to that, and I would like to add my absolute admiration for Fiona Doyle and her strength of character in coming forward. But I think it's such a pity that an awful lot of this rests on women who have already put themselves through, you know, going through dealing with what happened to them in the past, and men, obviously, of course, and then facing their the person who did what they did to them across a courtroom, and then having to come out in public in order to get justice. That she had to stand in front of the newspapers, and that she and did an amazing job on The Late Late. And as you said, she was an amazing person, that she said she still loved her father despite what he did to her, because he is her father. But that he did deserve the punishment for his crimes. That women have to do that in order to get justice in this country. And it's the same with the Magdalenes, that they have to come forward, that they have to almost beg for justice. Is an indictment of our court system, of the lack of education for judges, of sentencing around rape cases. And I think it's really something that that needs to be dealt with immediately. You know, we can't go on like this, that every time something gets done, it is dependent on victims who have already suffered enough having to put themselves through more publicity and, you know, the court of public opinion, which sometimes can turn on you as quickly as it can, you know, be on your side.
Yeah, but I mean, even in the, I was talking to Ellen before the programme, we were saying that now, because I suppose Fiona, it's a cause célèbre, and people are now exercised about it. But I think the time for being exercised about it is possibly past now, and we actually need action on this. Noel Rock, you know, as a budding politician, would you be kind of pushing that within your party, that we do have the guidelines and the and the suggestions that were being put forward by Helen O'Malley Dunlop here.
Yeah, I mean, what was being put forward there seems to me to be eminently reasonable. The idea of a permanent court of criminal appeal, in effect, seems to be a perfectly reasonable suggestion to my mind. Sometimes, you know, in the current climate, I do worry that we maybe boil too many issues down to, you know, penny and euro issues. But no matter what the financial cost is of this, I think this is an ethical and moral issue. And for me, I really can't see any reason why we wouldn't be looking at this in the next legislative term.
Mick O'Reilly, I mean, you're, as a lifelong trade unionist, do you think the unions in particular kind of don't get involved as much as they should, maybe in those social issues? Because many of members of unions would be women and in the lower paid section as well. Do you think that when you're talking about jobs and conditions, that the union movement hasn't been as involved in the social issues and that we're talking about here this morning?
Well, I think they do get involved, and they have always been involved. And there is a class dimension to all of these issues. They're not simply issues on their own. They have a class dimension. I mean, we're going to be discussing the Magdalens and all of that. And that's a huge class issue, as well as many other aspects. I just want to salute Fiona Doyle. I think what she done was extraordinary. I mean, when you think about it as an individual, it takes an extraordinary toughness, extraordinary courage, extraordinary grace under pressure, which is what Ernest Hemingway said was a definition of courage. It was simply unbelievable, actually, the courage that she displayed. And it seems to me that the things she's looking for are quite simple. It isn't that difficult to organise an education program for judges, though she mentioned in her own interview not only education but that the judges should be younger. I don't know how easy it is to do that, right? But it should be looked at. It should be looked at, because I think you know, people who lived in that era and were part of the establishment in that particular era are maybe not the people to change that. But what I would say about this is, when these cases get a high media profile, everybody wants something done. But then the next day they're not in the newspaper. These programs have a lifespan, and it's for all the campaigning organisations to ensure that the government and the ministers don't take their foot off the accelerator because it's gone out of the
Mick, I'd put you with respect that it's not up to those areas, up to people like us sitting around this table and people listening to us to put the pressure on rather than leave it to organisations whose funding had been cut in some cases,
yeah,
and who struggle with less and less people having money to give to give to charities as well. I'm also conscious that there's people listening to us this morning who may have been affected by this issue. So I'll just give you the number. It's a 1-800 number for the Rape Crisis Centre, 1-800-77-88-88. That's 1-800-77-88-88. I'll go back to you, Helen, on this.
Well, I think it's interesting you say it's a class issue. I don't think rape and sexual abuse are class issues, and I think they're also issues that are here with us today, unfortunately. In 2012, there were nearly 3,000 cases of childhood sexual abuse reported and validated to the HSE. I mean, I think that is a shocking number, like that children today are being abused. And as we know, abusers are people known to the victim. In cases of childhood sexual abuse, it's around 96%, whether that is a member of the family or a member of the community, somebody known to the child. We have a long way to go, I think, in Ireland. This is right across the classes. This happens in every every strata of society in Ireland, and we have a long way to go in terms of addressing the attitudes that are still very entrenched around this whole area. And I do think that we have to get into the schools, we have to have age-related programmes in schools, because it's there that you have the potential perpetrators. And we have had lots and lots of awareness raising programmes for, you know, telling victims how they should mind themselves, how they should take care. But we actually have to have we have to have awareness raising programmes for potential perpetrators, and we really need to work on those. And I do think to get into schools, get into primary schools, get into secondary schools, and it's worrying that the SPHE programme, which runs in secondary schools, which is a really good programme, that it's not been rolled out in schools because teachers don't feel confident enough to deliver them. And I do think we have to work on those kinds of things, because it's in those you know, those small groups with young teenagers where we talk about relationships and talk about things like what consent means, what the law is, and, you know, and also attitudes to drink and to drug taking. So these are huge issues. And I think the sooner we get into the schools and ensure that we are able to talk about these things, we will have a healthier society at the end of the day. But just to say, after the Fiona Doyle appearance on the Late Late Show, the rape crisis number 1-800-77-88-88 went out on screen, and I know Ryan Tubridy called it out as well, and we had extra people on the line that night. It is a 24-hour helpline, and there's always a trained person at the end of the line, and there were 70 calls until 4 o'clock that morning, and that's from people all over the country. And, you know, these are people who haven't spoken before and whose you know, memories are triggered by the story of Fiona Doyle. But it's great that people are using the helpline, are coming out, are speaking. Some of them will never want to go to court, and that's fine. But it's really important that they can get the therapy that's there. We're not saying that people have to report, because a lot of people don't want to report. And while that is their, you know, that's their prerogative,
yeah.
I do think it's really important that people know that they can get the help and support, because their own lives have been absolutely tainted by this. A lot of them might, you know, be ill in other ways, may suffer from things like agoraphobia, may have huge difficulties in maintaining relationships. That can be all managed and treated in a therapeutic way. And I would encourage people, wherever they are, and here in Coolock, there is a an outreach from the Rape Crisis Centre in the city, and the main office is in Leeson Street, but there is a service here in Coolock. And if people ring again the 1-800-77-88-88 helpline, they'll be able to get directed to whatever is appropriate for them.
Yeah, so just picking up on a point you were making about the schools. My own daughter, she's in sixth year, and she was at a public meeting the other day, and she was saying that actually when they do the CSPE, you know, and the kind of they learn about how many TDs are in the Doyle and how many judges, but that finishes at third year, and they never really get into to discuss this. And it's during the years, probably from 14 to 18, where a lot of experimentation happens, and where a lot, unfortunately, of rape happens as well. So maybe that's something for the educators to have a look at. Before we go to a break, there's a number of large number of messages in here. I'll go through some of them. Again, you're listening to Between the Lines, and in the studio we have Dr. Mary McAuliffe, Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, Noel Rock, and also Mick O'Reilly. Francis Lowry said 5 to 7 years, and usually the half that served said you're executed in other countries. She said that she would do something that probably, well, she said that would castrate the feckers, she said. you know, you, in your discretion, if you know, to read that out, that is a view. It's That's all I say on that.
It doesn't deal with the problem, unfortunately.
Pauline was on to, she's 67 years old. She said, Arbuckle Hill prison and places are packed with rapists and always has been. She feels that the judges have always been lenient to rapists. They're considered sick. They're not sick. It's the people who are raped who are affected and effectively ruined. She also feels there should be mandatory sentences. And she said, if you had mandatory sentences, that might very well cut down on the amount of rapes being carried out. Mary B. She said, Fiona Doyle is an inspiration. And thank God she was granted the privilege of seeing the man who abused her for so long get his just deserts. I was in tears when I initially thought he would walk. There's a few here on the marches as well. Peter Burney said, what difference do those marches make? The unions have companies by the short and curlies, and all they're interested in is themselves. John in Santry said, that pitiful crowd yesterday. I've never heard over 25,000 people being called a pitiful crowd. He thought it was a waste of time, and he thinks he would prefer to see a general strike or an early election. Matthew on the rape, he said, rape sentencing is a joke in this country. Basically, it's all he said, that no time are served at all if the rapist is now elderly. We kind of touched on that during the program. Mark Cummins from Ranelagh thought it was a great march yesterday. He said it was inspiring to see so many out, but then he said, but Fianna Fáil are up in the polls today. Fianna Fáil at 24% or 25%. If you want to get hold of the Dublin Council of Trade Unions, it's dctu.org. Mick is going to put that on his forehead now and carry it forevermore. There, we're going to take a short break and we'll return in about 90 seconds. Thank you. Sorry, we're back. You caught us there chatting away. We always keep talking here. We never take a break at all. Betty has been on to us as well. Betty's a regular contributor to the programme. He said, it's the judges who give small sentences for huge crimes should be taken out of the criminal courts and put in charge of fines for parking or dog licences because their judgment is impaired. Thanks very much for that, Betty. Betty, always strong, stringent, but very witty with her contributions. And we're going to go to something a lot less witty now, where anyone who has been listening to the radio or on television during the week will be well aware of the Magdalen's report under the chairmanship of Dr. McAleese. Some of what was said was very frightening. We're joined here by Mary McAuliffe. Mary is actually has been very involved in this whole issue, and just want to get your feeling as to the outcome of it. Again, with the Magdalen Laundries, everybody, especially over 40 or 50, knew somewhere along the line that what was happening to those people was not good.
Well, I think it's pretty much what was said about a lot of things that have come up about Irish society in the last few years that, well, everybody knew, didn't they, at the time. But I must say, first of all, welcome the publication of the report, which was a good thing to get. It is a problematic report. There's some good things in it, but there's a lot in it that needs to be looked at and studied. And unfortunately, I think there's some things in it that are quite problematic as well. But I would say first that I think the response of the government was sadly lacking. That Enda Kenny couldn't come into the Dáil on the day that the report came out and make an apology to those women who've been waiting for this for a very long time and expecting this and expecting that they would be heard by their government and that they would be given the apology that they so richly deserved. And I would be fearful that the government is now going to fudge this issue in some way. I think the main problem with this is they're afraid they're going to have to pay out lots of money, as they did in the industrial schools debacle and under the redress scheme. That may or may not be the case, and probably won't be the case, because there wouldn't be as many people coming forward.
But do you think that was one of the reasons why Enda didn't give a full apology at the time?
I think Enda Kenny is, when it comes to things like this, a decent man. Like, I think he does actually believe something was very wrong here. But I think he's listening to his advisors and to lawyers, and making and trying to avoid culpability or a complete culpability on the part of the state. So he said he was sorry that the women had suffered in these institutions, but he didn't apologise for the state's absolute collusion. And now you're beginning to see they're beginning to play with numbers, that the state only put in 25 or 26% of the women, and they're fudging the issue that actually the state had a duty to care to every single one of those young women and girls who were put into those laundries. They didn't oversee the laundries. The laundries were getting contracts from the state. They were getting contracts from the army or Sanuktharon, various departments, to do their laundry. So they knew, that the state knew where this laundry was going. They also knew there was no payment being made to these young women. There was no taxes being paid on their behalf. There were no pension contributions being made on their behalf. There was no regulation of that. There was also health and safety, no regulation of that. So it failed in its duty of care, and therefore needs to apologise to every single one of those women and girls, no matter how they got to be in those laundries, those Magdalene laundries. The state has to apologise to every single one of them. And I would say doubly apologise to the ones that actually put in itself through its own agencies, through the court system, etc. I think the report also let the church off the hook a little bit. I would be, we're not really talking about the culpability of the orders, who have said they were sorry. Some of them have made apologies, but those apologies have been, I think, half-hearted and need to be looked at again. And I think
they're legalistic as well, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very, of course, listening to their to the lawyers again. And it's all about the language they're using is very unlike what it should be, which is a Christian, fulsome apology coming from organisations like that.
Mick, you were going to get in there.
Well, a couple of things on this. I think this is a huge story, and I hope it stays around as a story so that we can focus on it. Now, in the way that it's at hand, and let me just say this about Irish society at the time, because there were people in Irish society that did raise these issues, mm-hmm. that stood up for this. And let me mention somebody who did, Owen Sheehy Skeffington, mm-hmm. who was a senator and was ignored and pilloried for his views. But he done that virtually alone as a representative in Dáil Éireann and as a senator. And let me just make that plug for him.
Actually, Kathleen Clark, who was also a senator, brought it up at the time well. So a few
people did in the Dáil, and a few people did in Irish society, mm-hmm. and they were very brave. And we should remember that there's always been minorities who had courage, not to just go along with the crowd. But the cabinet itself, and this is the point about the apology that I want to deal with, the cabinet was briefed by Dr. McAleese on this report. I don't know for how long, but they were briefed on it. Now, when Enda Kenny went in there, he didn't go in there as an individual. He didn't go in there as the leader of Fine Gael. He went in there as the leader of the government with an agreed approach that they had worked out, having not necessarily read the document, but been briefed on the document. And then within a day, the Parliamentary Labour Party, all of them, including those who were briefed, and I assume went on with what the Taoiseach, washed their hands of this because of the public outcry over it. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I think this is dead simple. You don't have to be a legal expert to work it. The government are culpable on this. Whatever they say, they will remain culpable on this. Alan Shatter said in opposition, not once, but repeatedly, that the government were involved in all this. Everybody knows it. So being smart about it and trying to use weasel words will not change, I believe, the outcome of the legal thing. So I would simply say to the government that in their own interests and in the interests of Irish society, would they just do what they obviously know is the right thing? Just go and say sorry
That's what they have to do. And it's shameful, actually, that they hadn't got... Because remember this, governments get advice from all kinds of forces, legal, constitutional, all kinds of forces. Every day, when you're in any important job, you have advisors here, there and everywhere. But you make the decision. Mm-hmm. And the idea is... How many times have we heard about tyranny in the world where people say, oh, well, it's, you know, it wasn't Hitler, it wasn't Stalin, it was actually the people who were advising them. Frankly, you know, governments are responsible for what they do, and the Kenny's responsible for what he says. And if somebody's whispering into his ear to him to say something else, he's grown up, he's the Taoiseach of this country, and he should say, I don't agree with that. I'm sorry that this happened. And
okay, if we're going to Helen, I am aware that the Labour Party actually on the following day unanimously called on the Taoiseach to issue an apology. And I believe there's a meeting, scheduled for tomorrow. Is that going to happen now? Because I know that your group...
What the worry is that the government will now try and do deals with individual people, and they will try and, weasel out of the full apology. Certain groups like Justice for Magdalens are kind of holding their powder and deciding maybe we need to hold back and wait for the apology and then consider meeting with the government. I think it would be a very wrong thing if deals were done with individual women. Yeah. There needs to be...
That happened in some of the other cases.
It happened in some of the other cases, and I think that was not the way to go. And I think the government needs to just, as you were saying, take its responsibility in this, act in the way, for the good of the people and at the will of the people, because the outcry out there is... The people of this country want this justice to be done, want right to prevail in this case. I think you couldn't find a more unanimous approach to this from society. And we were talking about how do we get governments to do things. Well, this is a social movement that's happening on social media, out there on the airwaves, on radio shows. Time and again, you hear people saying these women deserve justice. And they can't get individual justice. It must be collective justice, an apology on behalf of the state to the women, and restitution. And Justice for Magdalens has put in a very simple, non-adversarial, restorative justice proposal to the government, which if they took it on, could see this done very, very quickly. And you have to remember, these women are older. They're aging. They can't wait much longer. A lot of them are in their 70s and 80s. How long more have they to wait?
A lot of them are in England as well.
Well, the reason they're in England, because the minute they got out of those places, they saw Ireland as their prison camp, really. They left this country in case they were put back in again, because there is evidence that they, you know, sometimes girls would get out and for some reason would be picked up again and put back in again. So they felt they had to get out of the whole country, not a mind out of a Magdalen laundry. One other point I want to make, which the women are pretty upset about, is the fact that Senator McAleese says in a way that there was no physical abuse in these laundries. And I think that is a very problematic thing that he has said. Time and again, women I've spoken to, women that have come forward with testimony, any of the documentaries you may have seen in it, any sort of testimony out there in the public realm, talk about having their hair cut off, talk about the long hours they worked in the laundry, talk about being locked up in solitary confinement, talk about getting thumps and getting hit and getting their hair pulled.
Getting renamed as well.
Your identity was stolen. I mean, if that's not abuse of a sort, that is emotional and psychological abuse. So, I mean, what are we going here? Are we doing hierarchies of abuse systems here? I mean, maybe the abuse wasn't as extreme as the beatings in the industrial schools, but it was abuse nevertheless. And to call and say there was no physical abuse in these institutions is, I think, very problematic and something that has been very upsetting to the women, because they experienced these places as abuse.
Helen, before I go back to you, it just occurs to me that an awful lot of people listening to this, I suppose it's collective guilt or society as well, an awful lot of people listening to this programme would have known about those laundries. And, you know, you'd be nearly threatened with them when you were a kid. You'd be sent up to the the nuns are you know, and you know, should there not be an outcry from people as well? Because a lot of us who grew up in that time, we knew about this, or our parents were telling us about this. So again, it goes back to the bad old days, doesn't it? This idea that was then.
I grew up in a small town, and I remember our, you know, the laundry van coming on a Friday, and people's sheets being, you know, beautifully pressed and wrapped in brown paper. And when I think now, you know, where these beautiful clean sheets were coming from, it is shocking. And I'm sorry that my family were part of that, but I do think that it is terribly important that the Taoiseach, as you say, Mike, he is the leader of the country, and he was very well able to do it when the Cloyne report came out. I mean, it's not as if we haven't learned from the Ryan, the Murphy and Cloyne reports how important it is for people to hear the words, "We are sorry. We are sorry." Because no healing can take place until those words are uttered. And they're just the beginning, because that's the beginning of the healing process, is that the wrong that was done is acknowledged and we say we're sorry. And then what else can we do? So what if it's going to cost the country? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, these women, as you rightly say, Mary, are older now, and the kinds of needs that I've heard expressed by them are so minimal. It's just, I mean, if we don't respond to this in a generous way, I think it's a horrible reflection of us as a country. If we are not able to look after our old people and our children, and we are really falling down on both those ends of the spectrum, and I would hope that Enda Kenny, as he did when he stood up in the Dáil, and he was magnificent, I have to say, around the Cloyne report. Absolutely magnificent. And there was a lot more, I think, at stake in that situation, because he was actually taking on the church, who acted like the Taliban in those days. And I think it's time that these women were given what they deserve.
Before I go to you, Noel Rock, I just want to read out some of the comments we got from this. I know this is exercising a lot of people, and again, at the end of the programme, we will give you numbers that you can contact both for the Magdalene issue and the rape crisis issue. Martha Kelly contacted us. Thank you, Martha. She said, "Enda Kenny should have done the proper thing. It's terrible. He should apologise and acknowledge our terrible past and indicate we should move on. And stuff like this will never happen again." And Mick Keane from Coolock, he said, "There are people living today who shunned young women who were sent to those awful places. Let us not forget either, when we are talking about rape sentencing, lots of these women were raped and their lives ruined several ways because of it." And again, somebody regards the laundries, the people, you said, let us not forget who was in power when the laundries were in existence, I suppose. Mm-hmm. A disgusting stain on our contemporary history. I think that's one of the things that has come out, that it's only in the last year or two that actually, you know, despite successive governments being in for two generations, mm-hmm. that this has been put forward. One thing I find hard to believe as well is that there wasn't money made in these mm. laundries.
Well, I think that's problematic in that report. Yeah. You have to remember two of the laundries weren't included, Dunleary and Galway.
What is that?
Senator McAleese said there were no records available, but, you know, I think a deeper search would turn up records that would give an indication of how much were made. And I also, they looked at the figures mainly from the latter years of the laundries, when of course most people stopped using laundries in the same way because of course of the modernisation of washing machines and things like that. I mean, their glory years were the 40s, 50s and into the 60s.
And late 60s, early 70s in Cork. There was
in
one,
Cork,
as
yeah.
I said, near.
But they wouldn't
was
have been making as much money in those periods, because of course people are getting their own washing machines, so a lot of places began to do their own laundry, and they wouldn't have gotten as much contracts, and they began to lose contracts as well to more commercial laundries.
Yeah, just before I go to Noel, the fact that it was only 102 people or 112 people gave testimony to this commission. Does that is that a broad enough cross section, you know, to kind of give us as much info as we would need?
No, as a historian, I would say you would need a broader cross-section than that. And it shows the shame and a stigma that's attached to having been in a laundry. And I mean, Senator Kathleen Clark, who we mentioned earlier, said in the 1960s it would be better, in the Senate actually, it would be better for a girl to have on her record that she spent time in Mountjoy or any other jail than that she spent time in a Magdalen laundry. Mm. And that shows you the shame and the stigma that was attached. And the survivors of the laundries speak about that. And I think an apology would say to them, this was not your fault. You were not fallen women. You were not... Even the phrase fallen women. I mean, most of these women were put in when they were young girls. Yep. They were not, for the most part, unmarried.
And
mothers.
For some extraordinary obtuse reasons as well, as being so very good looking that she'd be a beacon for men.
Yeah, you know, if they were orphaned or they were Mitching School or seen as a bit problematic. And it is actually, this one is a class thing. You do see mostly it's working class girls from poorer backgrounds. And it is, as Manix Flynn said about the industrial school, a lot of it had to do with the crime of poverty. Mm. But also
it was cheap labour as well. Well, it was labour for nothing.
And really? And also the morality at the time, that girls on their own, girls without guardians, girls whose mothers had died or girls who were suspected of behaviour not becoming a young lady or respectability. Had to be put away for their own good. And I mean, we've all heard that about Irish society, things done for your own good. But it was for the good of society. And I mean, we have to see society was culpable too. They bought into that morality around respectability and shame and women who are not behaving in the right way or girls to be locked up. It's a culture, as Jim Smith, who is in Justice for Magdalens, wrote about so well, a culture of containment. Mm. Containment of those we didn't really want to have in society.
Noel?
It was interesting what Helen said, and particularly in mentioning the Cloyne report and on Taoiseach's response to that, particularly because that came, the formal response came about a week after the report. Mm-hmm. And I do think in a way it's perhaps endemic of our expectations in society that we expected his instant response to it, in effect, to include a wholesome, fulsome Christian apology. And I do think, I genuinely think that this week there will be the apology, the thoughtful, thought-out apology that the people deserve. Not necessarily an instant apology, but an absolute, sincere apology. I definitely expect in the coming days.
But I think actually at this stage that apology had better be the best of all apologies, because he's now lost the sort of high ground.
No, I appreciate that.
But also I must say, I must take you up on that, how would you expect a response very quickly? Everybody has known about this story, mm-hmm. unless you haven't been reading newspapers and looking at television, has known basically the bones of this story for a very long time.
Oh, no question.
And the McAleese report really, for the most part, put a little bit of flesh on that. I think it does fall down in some really important areas. But we have known about this for a long, long time.
No question, Mary. And that's why the report is commissioned. And that's why Taoiseach appointed Senator McAleese to be a senator, so that he could look at this work and have the time to do this work and the capacity and the latitude and the resources to do this work as well. So I think we are committed to it. I think the response that we've had instantly hasn't necessarily behooved us in any way as a government or him as a Taoiseach. But I think that given time, and it's only been, 5 days after it, that there will be a response that will, reflect the seriousness of this. I mean, they say the past is a foreign country. For me, 1996 was the last one. Yep, absolutely. For me, I was 9 years old at the time. I looked at this report, I read it myself, cover to cover, in effect. It's extraordinary. It's atrocious what's happened. And for me personally, I want to say that, I find it incredible what has happened here. And for me, as a citizen, I would apologise completely.
This is my personal view. Should a Taoiseach not have apologised and said, I will be back in a week or two when we study this thing and see what we can do? Mm-hmm. He didn't do that.
He did call for a full debate. Well,
he said that they'd have a dialogue, but he should have apologised. He should have apologised there and then.
Mary alluded to this earlier, and careful language, I suppose, is what you were alluding to, that he definitely used. There's no question about it.
They want to find out how much it's going to cost them. Mick, you wanted to get in there.
Well, I was just going to say about that. First of all, these women were slaves.
They were.
Now, When you look at the history of slavery outside of the dimension here, it's quite common for African slaves who are brought to Europe and to America to have their names changed.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that's taken away from them, because it's about dehumanising them. This is what happened. Now, for somebody to say that I need 2 weeks to reflect on whether I need to say sorry over that is, you know, really not credible.
No, I don't think it's 2 weeks whether or not he's saying sorry. I think it's the nature of the apology and the thought-outness of it, if you like.
Well, there's no nature of the apology at all. It refers to simply say there are things which he rightly, I think, would have a duty to reflect on. The forms of redress and all the rest of it. They're complicated.
Yes.
Sorry is not complicated. It's actually simple.
Yes.
Now I'm going to go to some of our our comments again, and we have had a huge amount of engagement on both topics today, not three topics actually. Some of the women in the laundries were taken out of their own homes because they're being abused by fathers, uncles, and relations, while the abusers were left in the family home. Shame on them. They knew what was going on, and that is a very good point. And we have Sandy, this guy, he said, it all comes down to money, doesn't it? All these women want is a payday.
That's not true.
Good Lord.
That's very cruel to say. Yes.
Well, again...
But what they should get is what's their due, which is a pension for their years of work.
Yeah, no question. Yeah.
And the wages.
And their wages, back wages.
And why not look for an apology for those that encourage their existence, because there are plenty of them still knocking about. So in other words, he said, kind of saying that the people who kind of let this thing go on for year after year after year.
Well, I mean, we saw the response of those who ran the industrial schools, the orders of the orders, and their response during that issue. I don't think there'll be much money gotten out of the orders of nuns either.
Well, in fact, I have another one on this. It says, what justice do they want? Is it money? Why should this government give them anything? Take it off the church. There are some very controversial. That's what we encourage in this program. We want people to do that, but I think we've answered. That question for you. I think it's Kieran Ryan. Sally Walker said, "Whatever about the Taoiseach's apology? You know that the people who were involved, are they being investigated? Nuns, priests, and lay people deserves to be brought up on this."
Well, interestingly, in the when we took a statement to the United Nations Committee on Torture, their response that if criminal act was found to be done in these cases, that prosecutions should happen. Now, nobody's really taken that on, you know, that's what he was saying. And also, that United Nations Committee said when the government at the time, and it was a Fianna Fáil government, I think, Sean Aylward, said that it was long ago and far away and back in the day, and it's not Ireland today, they said they refused and rejected that argument. So for the Taoiseach to say that it was a hard time, it was a different country, I think is very mealy-mouthed of him and very dismissive, really, of the suffering that continues. It's still, those women still suffer because they were in Magdalen laundries.
Now, Niall McGrath from Bunratty actually echoes a lot of what you've just been saying. Yeah. He says, it's a great show. It would be good to hear the legal side of the sentencing issue in more detail. Said, I overheard a conversation the other day where two old women were talking about the Magdalens, complaining about all the fuss. He said, they are still out there.
Yes.
Well, that's what we're... I think attitudes have a very long shelf life and they're very difficult to shift and to change. In fact, there was one some time ago in relation to rape and sexual abuse where 50 men went forward and shook the hand of a convicted rapist down in Kerry.
Kerry. In Listowel.
And that's not... That's only in 2 years ago. And, I mean, that is... That's part of us today in Ireland.
That's the stigma that the women talk about, the stigma of being in these places that Kathleen Clark said, that if being stigmatised as a Magdalen, even the name, Magdalen. What do we think about when we think of Magdalen?
And I can
prostitute,
remember,
repentant sinner.
I can remember 40 or 50 women with berets shuffling into the church in the St. Vincent's School in Cork as a child, and you kind of knew in your own heart that it was wrong, but that the power structures were there.
Mm-hmm. The Gardaí brought back women who tried to escape.
Yeah.
And some Gardaí who actually brought up things about rape and about the Magdalens and who tried to do something about it.
Yes.
Actually found themselves getting ostracised and told to shut up, basically.
Yeah.
Now, I know we've gone beyond a lot of time, but I want to give out some numbers again. The Rape Crisis Centre
is 1-800-77-88-88. 1-800-77-88-88.
Now, we will give you, I'm also going to give the number of North Dublin. It's the National Counselling Services, this is the HSE, and that's 1-800-234-110. That's 1-800-234-110. And
Justice for Magdalens does have a website on which there's lots of information if anybody wants or is affected by any of the...
Yeah, so if somebody wants to go onto the Justice for the Magdalens website, and there will also be a lot more information there than maybe in the public domain already.
Yes, and also if people are, out there who were affected by this and were in laundries, it gives you information on how to contact different people.
It's actually Magdalen Laundries. All one word, .com, and all in lowercase. So that's MAGDALENELAUNDRIES, MagdalenLaundries.com, and there is a lot of information available on that.
Just one last thing from myself. The Rape Crisis Centre is currently recruiting volunteers. We need volunteers for the helpline and for accompanying people to the sexual assault treatment unit. We give really fantastic training to people and ask them to commit to 2 years volunteering. So the same number, if people are interested in applying for the volunteer programme, it's 1-800-77-88-88.
And it's probably more crucial than ever that people would do that. Just to let you know that this programme will be on again tomorrow at 4:30. And I'd like to give a special thanks to all my guests today and for all your contributors. And you were many. This is an issue. These are issues I know which will be discussed in this community here, and will be covered by this radio station. And we will obviously keep in contact with the groups who are with us today. So I'd like to thank Dr. Mary McAuliffe, Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, CEO of the Rape Crisis Centre, Noel Rock, who will probably be a Fine Gael candidate in this area in the next local elections, and Mick O'Reilly, the President of the Dublin Council of Trade Unions. I've been Gerard Organ, and Ray Burke has been on sound. Thank you for listening, and good afternoon.